now.
And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I'll be your host alongside my co-host, Mr. Oliver Mair, our in-house blockchain analyst.
Thanks, Charles. Really looking forward to this episode today. We're taking a little bit of a different approach than last episode. Why don't you explain to the viewers what we have in store for them today?
That's right. We have Mr. Kevin Rose, co-founder of EOS New York and also head of community management. He's going to be on the show with us today. We're going to be talking about all things EOS.io and all things relating to the mainnet itself. So it's going to be an exciting show in store today. I think, with that in mind, I think we should just jump in. What do you think?
Yeah, let's jump straight to that.
All right, let's get down to business. Actually, just before we jump into this, we have a very exclusive announcement. We have just made our first investment here at SVK Crypto. This is really big news. To find out what the investment is, head over to either our Telegram page, SVK Crowd. If you type that in, you'll find it. Or head to our YouTube, www.youtube.com/SVK Crypto. The video is titled SVK's First Investment. Go onto that, check it out. Let us know your thoughts. Let's get down to business. So the idea of the today's show, Kevin, was really to get your insights onto the show as a block producer, as someone in the know, keeping the mainnet alive each and every day, that we wanted to just talk to you and ask you a few questions. What's going on? What are the updates? And we had kind of a few of our own pointers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's kind of kick things off. A lot's been going on this week. I know Oliver's been looking at a few different things. Can you give us your insight and opinion on Liquid dApps? There's some really interesting news that's coming out of there.
Yeah, Liquid Apps is a really cool project. So what essentially the way that I look at it is that it's like Loom, the Loom network for the Ethereum blockchain. So they are a layer two scaling solution that creates this kind of, I don't want to say marketplace, but a network of service providers that can offer scalability of RAM use. They're virtualizing RAM, but still offer the security of the EOS network. So they're still providing cryptographic proofs of everything that occurs back to the EOS network, which is then validated by all of the nodes on the network. So the way that that works is by using a pretty familiar mechanism to EOS developers, and that's just using the multi-index table. And you know, I'm still learning about it myself, but my understanding is basically you're purchasing EOS tokens to buy RAM, and in this RAM you basically have space, right? You have dedicated space for whatever you want to put there. And what the Liquid Apps software is doing, and the DApp network, the DSPs, the DApp service providers, they're able to quickly write and then overwrite that RAM space. All right. So before, when you create an account, for example, you're putting that into RAM and it stays there. That information, the state of that account, is stored in RAM for as long as that account is there. So what they're doing here is they're saying, all right, you have this RAM space. We're going to fill it up only with the stuff that you need when you need it, cryptographically proven that it's accurate. And then when you don't need it anymore, it is wiped and stored off chain. Okay, and you basically as a developer, you can choose a number of DSPs, and this is all free market, right? DSPs are going to offer their own costs, their own service, and it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch play out. But the point of it is to provide a scalability solution that EOS RAM sort of impedes upon in its current state.
Yeah, no, we really like what they're doing over at Liquid Dapps. It's an exciting project. It really has a lot of use cases within the network. One of the things I was kind of talking to the team about and just trying to understand is, how are the DSPs going to be initiated? Is that going to be mainly the block producers, just so that you ensure that you have like a decentralized network?
Yeah, well, it's for... And just to disclaim the entire thing is I am still learning about this myself, but obviously it's a natural thing for block producers to go into. We already have teams that are incredibly knowledgeable about EOS.io, dare I say close to experts, you know, Block One being the foremost expert and then followed by block producers and then the developers, et cetera. So naturally positioned to do that. But ironically, that's not what we have seen. So the first DSP to announce themselves was Airdrops DAC, which is a kind of, I don't know if they're a nonprofit or not-for-profit, but basically they lend resources. They own a ton of RAM, and they're able to facilitate airdrops in some transaction with developers. So they're not a block producer, and they announce themselves as a DSP. Now, the software to become a DSP is open source. It's free. Anybody can go get it. Anybody can learn about it. And there's like five Telegram channels where the Liquid Apps team are very active in to answer any and all questions. But it's very much an organic thing. So the market and the dApp network will create itself and find an equilibrium based on the amount of demand that's out there. You know, if there are a ton of dApps that are coming to DSPs and signing up, well, there's going to be more DSPs at the end of the day. And if the demand isn't there, there will be less. And of course, costs and packages that are offered by DSPs will follow that same path of equilibrium.
Yeah, I think that you know, it's gonna provide a whole new service layer for EOS. And I think one of the most interesting use cases is going to be around full state history nodes. So obviously, there's been a lot of you know, discussion about how expensive it is to run a full history node, particularly if you're not in the top 21. And you know, through Liquid Dapps and their VRAM system, they can actually set up a service through their DSP to offer full history API access to applications and have a separate payment system that would not be related to the amount of block rewards they'd get. Has that something that you've seen as quite a compelling use case, given where we are at the moment with the state history situation and the API access?
Yeah, I think first of all, I just want to comment that the speed at which the community moves, reacts to things, digests new information is so fast. As fast as block producers are, they are usually smaller, agile teams. It is the speed at which the community demands things get done. I mean, trying to keep up with that is obviously a full-time job. So the calling it a situation, you know, I learned yesterday that Oracle Chain, which is a standby block producer in the top 30s in China, a very strong technical team, they have been running a native history plugin node since launch. And nobody, and they handle a lot of traffic. Now, we don't necessarily know about it because, and when I say we, I mean the English-speaking community, because we haven't heard from them. They don't do a ton of English communications. So to call it a situation, I don't think is true. You know, we're spinning up a history node, EOS New York. We're evaluating our different options. So I think in 2 weeks' time, we're going to see probably all of the nodes that we didn't know about and a whole bunch of new ones in response to understanding that the network was being underserved. If in fact that's the case, I don't even think that we have data to really support that, except that there was a limited number of nodes from what you could see, like five. You know, that's a scary number. But as a use case, yeah, I mean, absolutely. If they're able to provide a cheap and stable way to give access to developers who don't have either the time, money, or expertise to run one of these history nodes that can sometimes be very high cost, that's a great use case. I mean, the use case that I'm really focused on, which isn't ready yet, is, and this is the first thing you hear from a lot of dApps, the cost of onboarding new users. So being able to virtualize new account creation. Now, I don't exactly know how that's going to work, but it's not something that is available in the current solution, but it is something that I know the Liquid Apps team are looking at very closely. And I think that will be a big thing to communicate to the community and outside of it to developers who are looking to build scalable dApps on blockchain, low cost of user onboarding.
Absolutely. And Kevin, just to add on to that, what's the current price of an account on EOS at this current point in time?
Like 10 cents. I can give you the real time. So it we did some testing and it takes about 3,300 bytes of RAM to have a new account where you have EOS tokens and you're able to stake them. Now, remember, any changes to state, any changes of whether you're staked, unstaked, new tokens, sending tokens, whatever, that's all changes in RAM. Your account is actually releasing and consuming RAM right all the time. But the what was I going to say? Well, the actual cost, I have my calculator here if anybody wants to do it listening at home. EOSRP.io, it's the EOS Resource Planner. So it costs about 0.1 EOS to buy 2,000 bytes of RAM. And then actually, it was a couple months ago that an optimization was made by Block One that basically gifts all new accounts with 1,400 bytes of free RAM. It's your RAM quota was recalculated because they actually overestimated the amount of RAM that you might need. So they added that in, reducing the total amount of RAM you need to buy to create a new account. So it's about 0.1 EOS times 350. It's 35 cents, about 35 cents.
This is a really big issue, right, Kevin? Because, you know, you're looking at adoption. We're looking at dApps entering the EOS sphere. We're looking at people gaining new users. And the fact that you have to pay per account for some of these business models that we're seeing, and even on the venture side, they not necessarily have a revenue model built in. So it's like, who pays for that? Is it the person you're looking to acquire, or is it the dApp itself? And I guess it's been quite a controversial topic.
I think that in the stage that we are in, this nascent stage, it's reasonable to expect that the user is paying for these costs. They're paying for the costs to transact. They're paying for the cost of their account. We're in the early adopter phase, where the average willingness of the EOS token holder to learn and embrace these concepts are much higher than your average person overall. But in the future, we're going to have to move away from it. It has to happen. These costs will either have to be mitigated somehow, for example, Liquid Apps, or they will have to be wholly and totally covered on behalf of the user by the developers themselves. You cannot, think about yourselves. Like, I'm not going to have a microtransaction to create my account. And then I'm not going to manage these resources. It's just not going to happen. So the Block One is planning an upcoming release in EOSIO that would ultimately be a hard fork for the network, where you can set who is billed for CPU, for example, which would be the developer, so they can assume those costs of transacting. But yeah, it is a big issue in the future. But the good thing is that everyone's aware of it. I don't talk to a single person in EOS that basically has any other mindset other than user experience is king. And that's what I think that we are benefiting from, you know, hindsight 2020 kind of stuff. We've seen what's happened and happening with Ethereum and every other decentralized application, every other blockchain, and seeing that the burden, there's such a high cognitive burden on users to be able to get on this stuff. It's too high, and we need to address it. Scatter's doing a great job of that. We're trying to build the easiest to use hardware wallet. We spent the last 3 weeks doing this. The first 10 minutes that you own our hardware wallet, the Metro, we have spent 3 weeks and more on developing the user experience for that 10 minutes to make it as easy as possible. That's the mindset that we need to have to make this blockchain successful.
So, Kevin, on the subject of accounts and usability and user experience being king, what do you make of the Tapper Talk announcement recently? What's your views on that?
I have so many questions. I mean, it's very exciting, right? So the first thing that whenever I see any announcements like this, I go, okay, are they talking about EOS or are they talking about EOSIO? Because EOS is a code fork of EOSIO. Warbly is a code fork of EOSIO. Everything is a code fork of EOSIO. So are they building their own chain, or are they building on the EOS blockchain chain ID, ACA, you know, and then there's like 60 more characters in our chain ID. So I reached out directly to their media relations department to confirm that. That was about 5 days ago. I haven't heard back. So once I hear from that, then I want to know where's their contract. I think I read that they staked five figures of EOS tokens, not US dollars worth, like five figures, like 10,000 to 99,999 to cover microtransactions for 300 million users. I'm very interested to learn how they're doing that. Also, I've never heard of Tap Talk, and to hear that they have 300 million users as a competitor to Reddit was very shocking to me. So I think it's very exciting. I'm skeptical, and I'm just looking for the truth there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I hadn't heard of Tapper Talk until that announcement either. So whilst it's exciting to see that, you know, this mainstream of adoption from you know, the incumbent businesses and using EOS.io or EOS mainnet, depending on which way they go. Yeah, you're right. We need to just dig into it a bit further and see exactly how that's going to work. But, you know, it's definitely a step in the right direction. Kevin, I wanted to jump to one of your proposals that's been out for a little bit of time now with the regards to the EOS referendum game theory and the whole 15 token participation. How's that going? You know, how is the what is the thoughts behind your 15% participation and having that rule changed in the constitution?
Yeah, this is complex. We're dealing with, this is a decentralized community. Nobody is in charge. Everybody is very fearful of, you know, those who are heavily invested in the ecosystem are invested in themselves and their reputation. And so reputation is everything to a block producer that isn't backed by whales. You know, by backed by whales, I mean, like, I don't know whales personally. I can't call, I do not feel comfortable that they will vote for EOS New York forever. So I have to act like our job is on the line every moment. And I'm assuming that that's how many others think for block producers. And it's going to take some time for this culture that we've created with the interim constitution as its foundation to change. So for anyone that isn't aware, the idea is that 15% participation, it doesn't matter, because imagine for a second that 14% were to vote yes for a proposal and then the proposal expires. 14% now are more tokens than vote for the most popular block producer on EOS. That is a huge amount. And to think that the block producers currently in a producing position would throw their hands up in the air and say, sorry, we can't do it. You just missed the deadline. Better luck next time. That's insane. Because those token holders, arguably, who are very active, right? They voted for a BP, then they voted for a referendum. They're paying attention. They know what's going on. They're going to look at block producers behind the standbys and say, hey, will you do it? Would you prefer to be in a producing position? Because we'll just vote for you and then we can get it done. If I was a standby producer, that's what I would do. I would say, well, I will support it. So the idea is that there's really, there's a personal threshold. There's an individual threshold for every organization, every block producer, where they decide how many tokens are enough for them to support it. That's kind of the basic idea. And it seems like people are generally agreeing with this. And it seems like that people are agreeing that these thresholds that we set were nice ideas, but they were arbitrary and they don't actually mean anything. So what we're trying to do now, we wrote the EOS user agreement, which is meant to be a replacement for the interim constitution. And of course, we can't force anything. We're one group in a decentralized network. We are now campaigning. I'm reaching out to block producers directly. I'm asking if they have any questions. We're going to hold a BP town hall, which I haven't yet announced, to see if anybody wants to come on and talk about it. It's going to take some time, but I think that people are waking up to the shortcomings of the current system.
And I guess one of the issues there with getting that enforced is that you have kind of two options. You can either get 15% participation, which is proven to be very hard at this point, to then have that, you know, kind of ratified and put on the chain and all of the 15 out of 21 BPs to vote for it and get it implemented. Or would there be a solution maybe in the future with the view to actually, you know, pushing the EOS mainnet forward at a quicker rate, to have this implemented with, you know, without having to wait for 15% of total circulating tokens to vote for this issue? I mean, do you see that happening?
I do. I see us, regardless of what it is, you know, there are a few proposals for replacement of the interim constitution. Ours is the only one that's currently on chain as a referendum, but it does not exist as a BP multi-sig proposal. But I think whatever it is, we will hit a point where we will make the change without 15%. And that's just a prediction. Of course, if for anyone listening, that's not something that EOS New York can force, of course. It requires 15 out of 21 to make that change. And then the voters are able to vote at any time for anyone for any reason without permission. And if they don't like that decision, collectively, they can vote for block producers who will change it back, or any number of permutations of that outcome. So yes, I think that we will eventually abandon this 15% threshold because it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I think that that's what I've been reading a lot online, and I tend to agree with that view in terms of let's get the EOS mainnet to the next stage. And you know, if that's what's stopping it, then we really need to kind of make a decision as a collective to you know, circumvent that and move forward. So I've seen on blocks as well that the UAE or the EUA has got around 13.6 million votes. And one of the biggest changes was to remove ECAF and any of their rights. So is that really an idea to remove their power and go back to only using these powers or having those powers abstracted to a layer above the base layer?
Well, that's kind of how it's always been. There actually is no such thing as base layer arbitration, only by name. It does not exist in any way that is enforceable or in a way that the blockchain recognizes. The only two mechanisms of governance or the ways in which we achieve collective decision making is through the token holder vote and the BP approval MSIG transaction. That's it. The base layer arbitration was, it's almost impossible to get into it without like talking about it for another hour. But it was a failure. It was a failed idea. It never really could exist. That's pretty much it. It is removed in that constitution, but I don't want to call it a constitution. It's the EOS user agreement. But the, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? We've heard that phrase over and over and over. And what we've found when we created, when ECAF was created, the expectation was sold to token holders that you don't really need to worry. You're protected. That's not the case. You do need to worry. And if you are not protecting yourself, you are not protected. And what I think is a result of this crutch that we advertised, by we, I mean kind of everybody that ever spoke about it, no one spent the time to build the preventative solutions with good and easy user interfaces that can actually help people protect themselves. And it's only as a result of, you know, it become more and more clear that ECAF was a total failure that people said, oh, okay, I need to go then build this service, which there's a business opportunity here now. And it's like with Chestnut, if you've heard of it, as the account protection, like that's a monthly fee, right? And I know that there's a developer at one of the other block producers that he wrote some code. He threw it on his Jungle testnet account, and then he published his private key and he said, go take it. And it took 3 weeks for someone to crack it. And then he made changes. So it's this kind of thing that we need to work on. It's not this other layer that was a failure from the start. So yeah, it's removed from the EOS user agreement, but it never really existed.
Got it. And so I also wanted to talk about very quickly the reg producer that came out last week and the idea of, I guess, making what we can on chain enforceable with regards to reliability of block producers. Do you think this is a good idea? But also, do you think that other block producers will actually vote to have this in, because it could obviously affect, you know, the ones that are less reliable would obviously not be in favor of doing it because they might get removed from the rotation. What's your kind of views on that?
Yeah, I think it's a very nicely, I think Ryan Betham at EOS 42 led the author of this document. I think it's very well structured. I agree with its intent. The thing that we all need to remember is that token holders can vote for any reason at any time without permission for whomever they like. And we're dealing with, we're not dealing with a perfect ideal vision of whatever it is we were trying to think of the 6 months before launch. Some BPs and token holders are the same. right? I think that generally the block producers that are in the top 21 are good, in that, you know, they are fulfilling their duties of producing blocks and running top grade infrastructure. I think that it will, even with the clear outline, because we've built this culture that we have, it will still be a rough road into getting into it, into entering this rhythm and setting these expectations. Not that it's impossible. I don't want anybody to think, oh, that will just make it all better. But I do think that having block producers, they're signing this agreement. You're signing it, right? When reg producer, and then your account name, that's the action, that you call to be entered into the block producer table and to be able to receive votes and receive rewards and run the software the way that block producers do. You're explicitly calling that action. And if this, and this would be a Ricardian contract associated with that smart contract, that you'd be signing. So it seems more plausible than certainly the one we have at establishing standards. But you know, I can't predict how it's going to work, but I think that it's a well-written document. I think they put a lot of thought in it. It's well-structured, and I'd like to see us at least try.
Yeah. I just also wanted to move on to one other thing that you came out of EOS New York on the 21st of Feb with regards to the EOS DAO. You know, some people might not have seen that article and seen what you guys are doing in partnership with EOS DAC. Would you be so kind to just bring us up to speed and the viewers on that initiative?
Oh, yeah. We are so excited about this project. The EOS Alliance is a good idea, mm-hmm. right? The EOS Alliance is meant to be a nonprofit that just does good stuff for EOS. And that's a good idea. There's the Bitcoin Foundation, there's the Ethereum Foundation, there's the Ethereum Community Fund. There's a Monero volunteer type bounty fund. There are these semi-centralized organizations that do things for the networks in which they're associated with that the decentralized network could not do for themselves. It's okay. Centralization is appropriate in certain circumstances. But I think we're building the best of both worlds. So the EOS Alliance approached EOS New York, and we came up with a plan to put the entire organization on the blockchain. And this is even forgetting that it's the EOS Alliance or an EOS organization, we're going to take a charity and we're going to put it on the blockchain. And this will be the first time that this has ever happened. This is a very exciting thing. If you Google nonprofit corruption or waste, you will see a plethora of articles that describe hundreds of millions of dollars that are simply unaccounted for or have been accounted for and are just can't be explained or just wasteful. This is in its most fundamental sense, where are the funds that this organization has and who has the private keys that can access them? And everything will be transparent on chain. That's the goal. And so we're devising a number of different facets for this organization of how they can provide tangible value back to the community. Now, what they have done so far has been valuable. It has yielded a lot of good community discussion in helping set the expectations of how to move governance forward. But some of the things that it didn't do was provide code and capital. That's what's going to make a big difference. It's providing open source software solutions or paying people who can build the open source software solution, all dedicated to making EOS better. That's what we're trying to build. And, you know, it's going to be complex. We've partnered with the core team from EOS DAC, DAO Coco. And together we're putting a charity on the blockchain. We're very excited. And the EOS Alliance board is as well.
So, Kevin, for the community listeners tuning in to today's podcast, how can they help and support this initiative?
Well, I would say that there isn't much you can do yet, but I do want, when people discuss it, I want them to think that this is a nonprofit. This is a charity. If it uses a token to govern itself, this will not be a speculative financial instrument. No one's going to do an ICO. That's not what this is about. Okay. This is about looking at this organization, reading what they offer and saying, oh, that's something that could really help. I think I'll donate. I mean, that's going to be the pivotal decision of whether or not this organization is successful. Is you're going to look at what they say that they're going to do, and you're going to say as a token holder, like, I think that EOS is better off with this organization doing those things, so I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to donate. And there's much more to it than that, obviously. We want to build out a membership program, and we want to do the things that the Bitcoin Foundation does, but transparently, on-chain. We want to walk the walk. And there's no way for an organization like this to better represent EOS than to literally become part of it.
And that's what we love to hear. Well, listen, Kevin, thank you so much for your time and insight on today's show. If people want to keep up to date with all the great newsletters that you've been putting out week after week, where's the best place for them to check that out?
You can go to Medium, our EOS New York account, one word, and sign up there. You can sign up on our website at the bottom to put your email in. Otherwise, we're EOS New York everywhere. Twitter, Telegram, Medium, Chinese, English, you name it. And you can always find me on Telegram. My username literally is EOS New York.
We love to hear that. And while we have you on the show, is there anything that you want to announce exclusively to the SVK crypto listeners out there?
We are going to be launching our reservations site for, not pre-orders, but reservations site for the EOS Metro. So if you want to be first in line to get the easiest to use hardware wallet built specifically for EOS dApps, then stay tuned and we'll provide a link to you, Charles, and the rest of the SVK team to give out to people if they're interested.
Yeah, done. Well, listen, Kevin, as always, thank you so much for your time and insights. We really appreciate it because we know you're a busy guy keeping the network afloat. So thank you once again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
I want to say a big thank you once again to Kevin Rose for making it on the show today. We really appreciate your valuable time and insight. And remember, if you haven't already, hit us up on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Feel free to join our Telegram group, SVK/crowd. Also, if you have any questions or queries, email myself, CStory@SVKcrypto.com. That's a wrap, and I've got to bounce.